You're listening to The Conk, Gainesville's true storytelling project, a production of Grow Radio, Gainesville's community internet radio station located at www.growradio.org. The Conk occurs on the first Tuesday of the month at Lightning Salvage, located at 1800 Northeast 23rd Avenue. And we thank Satchel's Pizza and Lightning Salvage for sponsoring and hosting the Conk events. People are asked to tell a five-minute true story based on the month's theme. And the theme for this event, the internet, was recorded on October 6th, 2015. And included in this podcast are stories about a website hack job that'll surprise you, a fascinating encounter with Paul McCartney, the Columbia Record Club, and a young boy's attempt at searching the internet. You can find out about upcoming Conk events on our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/theconkgnv. You can also check out older Conk podcasts at growradio.org under the podcasts tab. And now, here are the stories.
Hello, I'm Tracy, and I have the first story tonight. I'm going to keep it really short. So, I am one of the owners of one of the oldest private boys camps in the country, and we were established in 1904, and it's a beautiful pastoral, you know, setting on a lake in Wisconsin, and we have hundreds of little boys over the course of the summer come through. So we're very wholesome. We're all about values and family values. And of course, we have a website, camphighlands.com, in case you want to look it up. And we just a month ago were sitting at dinner and having dinner with friends, and we got a text. Actually, my phone texted, dinged, and I ignored it. My husband's phone dinged, and he ignored it. And then it dinged again, and then our home phone rang. And so we thought, what's going on? We looked at our phones, and someone said, the Highlands site has been hacked. So, of course, we quickly went online, and we logged in, and our website had been hacked by ISIS. And there was a video of a beheading on our website. It's a true story. So we called our programmer really quickly, and he took the site down. And now we get to file a complaint with Homeland Security. Super awesome. But that's my internet story for you.
I wasn't expecting that one. Wow. Thank you, Tracy. Justine? All right. Justine, everyone.
The lighting here is brutal, so no pictures. And if you can close your eyes and picture Brigitte Bardot, I would really appreciate that. Anyway, oh, hey, like that. The lighting's down. So I'm going to tell you about how I found out through the internet that Paul McCartney had talked about me. Do you all know this story? Okay, like every one of my story, it involves my having cancer, believe it or not. So anyway, let me just go back. I've been a McCartney fanatic since I was really young. And not because I don't know any better, but because I know quite a bit, actually, about music. And for quite a while, actually, the only reason I'm telling you all this is to set up how much this means to me, okay? So, I mean, the Beatles, McCartney, they got me through all my teen angst in a major way. For quite a while, I did a show for Grow called McCartney Reconsidered. Bill, what did you learn about Paul McCartney through my show? Come on, speak up. Come up here if you have to. What did you learn? What did you learn?
I learned something new every week about Paul McCartney for the time Justine did her show. And specifics have escaped me at the moment, but I can tell you that as a Beatles fan growing up, I recognized the genius of all the members of the band, but did not appreciate the particular genius of Paul McCartney until Justine started really educating me and everybody else who listened to her show about this man who is a genius, like I said.
Yeah, I find him far more progressive, far more experimental, and far more honest than Dylan, Pink Floyd, or David Bowie. And if you get into his deep catalog, you start to realize that's true. Just to make one case in point, everyone wants to dismiss silly love songs as silly love songs. And it's actually nothing silly about it. John Lennon was going around bad-mouthing McCartney, saying all he does is write silly love songs. So McCartney said, fine. And that song, if you listen to the lyrics, they're actually an extremely passive-aggressive attack on John Lennon that became his biggest number one ever. The irony of that passive-aggressive attack must be respected, and the bass line kicks ass. So anyway, that said, I just want you to understand how this what happens meant to me. I was living in South Korea, and I was diagnosed with cancer. At this point, everyone asks, what kind? Why do you need to know? So we'll just keep that a secret. Anyway, so I had cancer. And needless to say, I was at about the lowest point in my life. And in order to recover from cancer, during chemotherapy, not chemo, I was going through radiation treatments, I was making videos for McCartney songs, obscure ones from the deep catalog that I thought were really cool and loaned themselves to a lot of enigmatic video. And so this was sort of how I got through radiation treatments, was making these McCartney videos. During my recovery period, which is quite lengthy, I found out that a friend of mine back in Ohio, who had been one of my main supporters as a musician, because I used to do a lot of gigging. I did quite a bit of gigging in Korea, in fact, illegally, and quite a bit of gigging in Ohio, legally. And Scott Fedoroff was a local entrepreneur who owned a place called Scott's Folkatorium, which was a ridiculous name, but that's who Scott was. He was a ridiculous man. We loved Scott. Everybody in the music community loved Scott. And when I was down with cancer, Scott threw a benefit for me at his event and raised almost $2,000 to help with the costs of the cancer. $2,000 doesn't sound like much with cancer in America. But when you live in an actual sophisticated country that values human life over money, like Korea, you realize that socialized medicine is the only way to go. My entire cancer experience cost me out of pocket $3,000. They did not put me on a 6-year waiting list so that I would die. They wanted me in within 2 weeks of having discovered the tumor. Everything you hear in this country about socialized medicine is a complete lie from the right. I'm not telling you this because I've read it. I'm not telling you this from any kind of propaganda. This is my personal experience. Socialized medicine is the only way to go, period. And anyone who is convincing you otherwise is either a fool or has an agenda. That's the end of my speech. So this Obamacare, by the way, I'm not even eligible for it. I have no health care. This is the second year going. Obamacare is bullshit. Sorry for the kids, but it's bullshit. So I was going through cancer with socialized medicine in South Korea, and Scott Fedoroff had thrown this big party to raise money for my funds, which, you know, when my out-of-pocket expense was $3,000, $2,000 was pretty helpful. You know, that's a lot of money. Well, as I was recovering, I found out that Scott had to close the Folkatorium. He had to close the Folkatorium because Starbucks moved into town, and Scott was serving coffee and having music, and the manager of Starbucks called ASCAP and reported Scott for having this venue. So ASCAP came out and shut him down. The night that Scott closed the Folkatorium, he died because this was his life dream. And Starbucks and ASCAP killed my friend Scott. He got in his car, headed home, and died on the way home. We don't know if he had a heart attack or if he just went off the road because he wasn't paying attention, but he died. So I'm recovering from cancer. The man who helped me died. And then I go to Thailand, and I nearly drowned scuba diving. So I'm having an extremely difficult time. I'm probably as depressed as I've ever been in my entire life. Sick, depressed, brokenhearted. I've been making these McCartney videos and loading them up on YouTube. And then I found out through the internet that McCartney had talked about seeing one of my YouTube videos in Radio Times, which was the British version of TV Guide. And in the middle of all this, I was really extremely excited because, you know, I was at my lowest point. McCartney was my favorite artist, bar none. And for this to happen at that time is nothing short of mystical. You know, I mean, this is an aligning of spirits and planets that is totally unusual. And that gave me the faith to realize that, you know, something powerful was going on beyond the cancer, beyond Scott's death, beyond my near scuba diving fatality, that, you know, there were powerful forces holding things together. And what he said, McCartney, in the magazine wasn't really all that amazing, but he was talking about millions of you know, tons of fan videos. And they asked him about all these fan videos on the internet, and he only mentioned one, and it was mine. And I'm going to read you the brief paragraph. There's not much to it, but it's pretty exciting for me. Hold on. I have gotten really old, you know, so now I have to wear glasses when I read anything. But I think it kind of gives me that sexy librarian look, at least not when I'm under these brutal lights. So if you go to the YouTube website and type in practically any Paul McCartney song, you'll find countless versions by the man himself and even more by adoring fans with acoustic guitars sitting in their kitchens in Tokyo or Arkansas. Have you ever looked at this stuff? And McCartney says, to tell the truth, I did. The other day, my son, James, 30, and I were looking up something. We went onto YouTube and hit me. I couldn't get off it for half an hour. It was actually very cool, as there was a bonus track on my last album called 222. And someone had made a video for it using pictures of Brigitte Bardot in her heyday, when we fancied her like sliced bread. She was just such a babe. The way I imagined the song was like the mobile phone ad that hasn't been made yet. Big modern buildings and a concourse and this girl with a pencil-thin skirt and legs that go on forever and these heels walking through it, turning every head. And the tag for the imagined ad would be the phone that turns every head. And it's strange. It's fantastic, actually, that someone's done something very similar. But YouTube is like seeing the fans you knew were there but never reached. And here they are. You can see them in their own homes, which is great. I love it. Such feedback. So there I was being told that McCartney was pleased that someone was thinking like him. That's it. Thank you.
That's amazing. Thank you, Justine. So the internet. Danny? All right. Danny's got a story about the internet.
Hello. So I'm gonna tell you a story about the internet that I don't know. It's a different side. I mean, I love the internet because you have like all the information at your fingertips, literally. And you know, but there's one thing that it's kind of taking away from, and that is like the art of discovery and. Like, mainly, like, discovering music, like, at least the way I did, and at least the way my friends and I did. I was involved in the punk scene in the 80s, back in Miami, and, you know, there was no way to really find this music. You had to, this was something that was given to you by a friend, and I had a friend, he moved from Alabama, of all places, and moved into my school, you know, in the middle of the year, and I guess, you know, he decided he was gonna, you know, he shaved a mohawk, he wanted to reinvent himself, you know, so He had a mohawk, and you know he ended up sitting next to me in class, and he really wanted me to listen to punk music too, and I was into skateboarding, and I didn't know what music to listen to. I mean, in 1983, I got a boombox for Christmas, like the biggest boombox ever, and I joined. Do you remember the Columbia Records and Tape Club, where like for 99 cents you'd get 20? All right, did anybody here ever finish that whole program? No, one person? Okay, because you're the only other person I met. I did. I finished it. Like, I got, like, the 20 records for free, and then for 2 years, you had to buy a record a month. And every month, they would send you this little catalog, and on the front of the catalog was, like, the artist of the month. And if you didn't pick, if you didn't buy one, if you didn't, like, pick one out of the catalog, they would send you that. And I made the mistake one time. I didn't pick, and they sent me, like, all the theme songs to, like, the 007 movies, and it was horrible. Like, you know, it's like, that's not what you want to listen to. So I made sure, like, every month, you know, I actually checked the box and sent my money in, and I got, you know, all the stuff, and I was exposed to, like, you know, the Stray Cats and the Cars and Devo and the Clash and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of it was Prince and the Culture Club and stuff like that was popular at the time, of course, you know? But anyways, Billy, if you really wanted me to listen to punk rock, so he had the Sex Pistols and the Clash, and we started listening to that, and I was like, oh, this is great. And he's like, yeah, but that's not, this is older, like, this isn't like the real punk rock of today. I'm going to get something, we're going to listen to it together. So he knew that I was into like surfing and skating, so he went to the record store, and he got this album called The Butthole. It was from The Butthole Surfers. And we sat down to listen to it, and it was the oddest thing. Like, the lyrics were like, I'm going to move down to Florida and bowl a perfect game. I'm going to cut my leg off and dance naked in the rain. And it was this really weird thing, and I was just like, dude, this is, like, horrible. Because it was really weird. It wasn't even, it was just, like, sounds and stuff, you know? And he was like, well, this isn't what I expected. And he ended up giving me a Dead Kennedys album. And I brought it home, and I couldn't figure out what speed to play it on because the guy was singing so fast. So I'd play it on slow. And I was like, nah, this isn't right. You know, this can't be right. And then I'd put it on the regular speed, and I'm like, well, this can't be right either. Maybe there's a speed in between, and my record player doesn't know. Like, what is this? But after listening to it a couple times, like, you know, I could start to register, like, what he was saying and reading the lyric sheets and stuff. And I was like, okay, this is it, you know? And I got really into it, you know? So I wanted to search out more. We've turned out, like, later on, there was a band that was coming to town, the Bad Brains. This was 1985. And he wanted to go really bad. So we went to go see the Bad Brains on Miami Beach. And when I was there, I started noticing everybody's wearing, you know, these concert shirts of all these bands that I had never heard of. So I started taking mental notes. And I was like, oh, what is this, you know, Circle Jerks? What's that? Oh, mental note. You know, I'm going to look that up. Suicidal Tendencies. Yeah, you know. So I went back to the record store, and I hunted out these albums, and I bought them. And I started to realize, you know, that none of this stuff was on the radio. Like, there was no way to really find this stuff except if you were going to go to shows or if you went to these record stores. So I kind of became like, I realized you had to be like a detective at this point, and you had to know things. You had to, like, I knew certain record labels that I loved, like Discord Records or Lookout Records or stuff like that. And you knew that the bands that were on these records were going to be great bands if you were into that style. So the record labels kind of stuck to what they, you know, to one specific genre. And then also you could also tell what bands to like by the band members that were in there, like the guitarist for the Circle Jerks. He was in this band, you know. I picked up a record one day and found out he was the guitarist for Bad Religion too. So I got turned on to Bad Religion. Or I liked Social Distortion. The two guys in Social Distortion were in the Adolescents. One guy was in Agent Orange. So I started finding all these different things, and you had to kind of have this knowledge. And nowadays I feel like you've lost that. Like, you know, if you want to get into a certain genre, that's it. You know, you can go get yourself like the punk rock kit, you know, and that's it. You got it the next day, and you have all this knowledge at your fingertips. As a kid, I would buy a record, and I would go home and I would get a cassette, and I would record that right away. Record that onto a cassette so that I could trade that with someone else who had a record that I wanted. And, you know, that was how, you know, we got through, you know, the music, and that's how we learned about music. And, you know, I do love the convenience of it, you know, but, you know, like I said, there is a dark side to it, and it does take away from some things. And but I guess it's like the Dead Kennedys said, you know, give me convenience or give me death.
Thanks, Danny.
All right, so this is a story from New Zealand's education system about 15 years ago when my son was about 7 years old. And his teacher had a little conversation with a couple of us parents after school one day and said, I've been thinking we probably should get the kids kind of familiar with using the internet to do research for their projects, because it seems to be a growing thing. People are going to be using this to do study one day. And we're like, yeah, I guess that's kind of going to be a thing. So a few days later, my son came home from a friend's place after school looking very, very pale and a little strange. And I said, hi, what have you been doing at Jeremy's place? And he said, well, the teacher gave us this project to do, and we have to do like an illustrated poster about a species of bird. And each of us has to research this using the internet. And so we went to Jeremy's place and we opened up the internet. And we went onto Google and we said, let's get the pictures for our poster. And so we pressed image and we were looking for an image search on our birds. And I said, and how did that go? And he said, well, my one was fine. because I'm doing the Haast's Eagle. And so I searched for Haast's Eagle, and I got some really cool pictures of this giant ancient New Zealand eagle, and it was really fantastic. And we printed out the pictures. And I said, great, how about Jeremy's? How did Jeremy's go? And my son kind of said, well, I don't really know what to say. And I said, why, what bird did Jeremy choose? And he kind of hesitated and looked at his shoes for a minute and then looked up and said in a really quiet voice, Jeremy wanted to do the blue tit.
Jeremy knew exactly what he was doing, didn't he?
Thanks for checking out the Conk Podcast. As always, we thank our sponsor, Satchel's Pizza, for allowing us to host the event at Lighten and Salvage every month. I want to remind you that you can find more about the Conk on our Facebook page, www.facebook.com. You can also check out the past Conk podcasts at www.growradio.org and click on the Conk Podcast tab. We hope to see you at upcoming Conk events in Gainesville.